Looking ahead to next year's federal budget,
the GOP has its eyes on Medicare and Medicaid.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It is Tuesday, April 5th.
Coming up, all the latest on budget negotiations in Washington. Plus, we'll speak with the U.S. Secretary of Education about education funding. And there's a new technology to measure happiness. Our special correspondent, David Brancaccio, will have that story.
All right here on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
President Obama meets with the House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader at the White House today to try and avoid a government shutdown later in the week. They're looking for $8 to $10 billion more in cuts from what are called mandatory spending programs. Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale explains.
So far, budget cutters have concentrated on programs that Congress funds year to year. That includes air traffic control, foreign aid, and food inspections. Now negotiators are looking at a bigger part of the government, programs where the number of eligible people or projects triggers the spending automatically. Social Security and Medicare are the big ones, although they're not part of this year's budget talks. The ones that are, highway projects that go to private contractors, and farm subsidies. Budget analyst Stanley Collender says the broader focus helps spread the pain.
It means that it's not just typical Democratic constituencies that would get hit, that is, poor, the elderly, those types of things. It could broaden it out so that it includes business, that it includes more middle to upper middle and to even upper income folks, include farmers in typically Republican states.
By cutting programs where spending is on autopilot, Democrats are trying to shield some safety net programs on the chopping block, like low-income home heating assistance. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Well, when House Republicans passed their budget plan last month, it included cuts to education. Those cuts have been taken off the table for now by Senate Democrats. But at the state level, education budgets are being cut. Let's talk education funding and more now with the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. He's with us from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Now, you've called for an overhaul of the No Child Left Behind law. What do you want Congress to do?
We want to fix it. We think a lot of it is broken, and we want it fixed before the August recess so we can go back into the new school year with a law that's much fairer, much more focused, and a lot more flexible.
I've seen that 82% of schools might fail the goals that are set in the law this year. Why do you want to keep this law?
Well, we want to fix it. And the law is far too punitive. There are many, many ways to fail. No rewards for success. It's led to a dumbing down of standards, which is a huge problem, and it's led to a narrowing of the curriculum, and we can fix all of those things.
You've said we have to educate our way to a better economy, but many states seem to be doing just the opposite. They're making steep cuts to education budgets. What would you say to state lawmakers about how to cut education smartly?
If governors have to cut, there are smart ways to cut, and frankly, there are dumb ways to cut. You know, you have some governors who are cutting early childhood education. I just simply can't support that. Our 3- and 4-year-olds don't have lobbyists. But if we want to close achievement gaps, if we're serious about giving every single child a chance to be successful, we have to have them enter kindergarten ready to learn and ready to read.
On to college education now. You need more than a high school degree to make it in this economy, but college tuition is going up. Do you think poor kids are going to be left out in this new economy?
I don't. You see some universities, to your point, raising tuition. You see some universities that are actually reducing costs. You see some universities going to 3-year programs. You see some going to no-frills campuses. And I think our students and their parents are smart and they're savvy. And where universities are escalating costs, you know, in ways that just don't make any sense, I think they're going to lose market share.
What do you think is a reasonable percentage of people that we should expect can get a college degree in this country?
What's been so interesting, Jimmy, is one generation ago, we led the world in college graduates. And we've fallen from first to ninth. And the president and I just fundamentally believe we have to educate our way to a better economy. So he wants us a decade from now to again lead the world in college graduates. We'll have to go from about 42% of our 25 to 34-year-olds to about 60%. And that's an ambitious goal, but I'm convinced we can make it.
Arne Duncan is the U.S. Secretary of Education. Secretary Duncan, thanks so much for joining us on the Marketplace Morning Report.
Hey, thanks. Have a great day now.
Well, the budget wrangling today at the White House is all about this year's budget, fiscal 11. But today we got a controversial new plan for next year's budget, which is fiscal 2012. Wisconsin Republican House member Paul Ryan's plan would trim more than $5 trillion in federal spending over the next decade. The lion's share of savings comes from cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Marketplace's Gregory Warner is with us from the Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning.
So paint this landscape for us. How different does health care look under Congressman Ryan's plan?
So start with Medicaid. Right now, if your income is low enough, the states and the federal government pretty much have to cover you. Under Ryan's plan, the amount of money the feds would spend on that coverage is capped with a block grant given to the states to use how they want. Even a bigger change, though, would happen to Medicare that covers seniors and also people with disabilities. Ryan's plan would dissolve Medicare, and instead seniors would buy private insurance on the open market, just, you know, go get the best deal they can, and then the government would help pay a percentage of those premiums.
Now, we've seen what a tricky financial issue health care reform can be, certainly. But isn't this going to face the same scrutiny?
Oh, of course. I called J.B. Silvers. He teaches healthcare finance at Case Western Reserve University. He points out that seniors are a lot wealthier now than they were in 1965 when Medicare was passed. So, you know, some might agree that they should pay more for healthcare. Politically, it's a different story.
I mean, it's a huge gamble with Grandma. And to be honest, Grandma's not going to like this at all.
And, of course, Congressman Ryan knows this, and he's made it clear this will not affect seniors in the program now, just the rest of us, the next generation grandmas and grandpas.
All right. Marketplace's Gregory Warner at the Health Desk. Gregory, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, let's get reaction now from our regular Tuesday guest, Julie Neiman. She's an analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. Julie, this plan cuts Medicare and Medicaid. It's bound to be politically unpopular.
Well, it's a good first step, though. You know, you got to talk about the other resident gorillas, Social Security and defense. You can't freeze spending at existing levels. You got to reduce spending. My favorite daily reading is the Treasury report. The government spent 8 times revenue last month. Now, that's March Madness. We've got to maintain our national credit rating and ability to fund the humongous debt at reasonable rates. If we don't, the interest on debt becomes the driving component of the budget.
And, Julie, this plan from Republican Paul Ryan coming out just as we're getting into another presidential election, believe it or not. Doesn't that seem like an odd time for something this drastic?
Odd time, but only time. There's a narrow window of time in which to reform. That's 2 years before elections. All reform is popular as long as it hits the other guy. This has to be piecemeal. We can't get omnibus packages through, so getting started now means you've got a little window of time to do it.
Julie Neiman, analyst at Smith, Moore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
Texas Instruments is going to buy National Semiconductor for $6.5 billion. That marriage creates a powerful microchip firm.
Add another salty treat to the company that makes Kettle Chips and Pop Secret popcorn. There's word this morning that Diamond Foods has agreed to buy Pringles, which is currently owned by Procter & Gamble.
Mergers, acquisitions, deals of the day, all the numbers can be found at marketplace.org. Just check out the numbers section.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, April 5th. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Now let's get to the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? Things just got worse for Portugal. The rating agency Moody's has just downgraded the country's government debt again. In order to borrow money, the country now has to pay investors an interest rate of almost 10%. But Steve, with credit card rates in this country sometimes up at 20%, we wanted to know why 10% is so bad.
Why is it so bad?
Well, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Portugal is in deep trouble. The current government failed to win support for its deficit-cutting measures. That triggered a general election scheduled for this summer. And the uncertainty has pushed up the cost of borrowing for the government. It now has to pay an interest rate of almost 10%. Dominic Swords at the Henley Business School says the burden is becoming almost unbearable, just as the government has to raise more money.
they're going to find the cost of that is much higher than they've been paying last month. And that means they're going to have to borrow even more.
And that will damage their creditworthiness further. If the rating agencies downgrade Portuguese bonds again, many investment funds will be unable to buy them, making a bailout almost inevitable. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
An oil tanker is expected to dock at a key eastern Libyan port held by the rebel government there. The country, of course, was knocked out of the oil business altogether when a no-fly zone began to be enforced 18 days ago. Michelle Vesey-Bachman is from Lloyd's List in London, and she covers the shipping industry. She's with us right now. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Steve.
Who's selling this oil? Is it rebels? And who's going to be buying it?
Well, what we've worked out so far is that the first shipment being sold by the Arabian Gulf Oil Company, which is a subsidiary of the National Oil Company that broke off quite early in the conflict from the government-controlled oil company. We know that Qatar is marketing the oil, and that could suggest that it's destined for France or Italy, which are normal buyers of Libyan crude.
What kind of sign does this send to the international community about oil sales coming from Libya?
Well, I think it really signals that if this shipment is successful, that Libya is back open for international oil trading.
There was some dispute about whether rebels would be able to sell the oil under international law. Has that been cleared up?
According to the lawyers we've spoken to, because the money from the sales is not going to the government-held National Oil Company or for the Gaddafi families, that therefore, according to their guidelines that were clarified last week, that yes, it's okay for these kind of deals to take place.
Michelle Vesey-Bachman from Lloyd's List, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
In Japan, radiation is starting to affect yet another industry. Fishing, with big losses after the tsunami, now has a problem with radioactivity. Late yesterday, power plant owner Tokyo Electric Power began dumping the toxic water. And now, for the first time ever, Japan is setting a new standard for the amount of radiation allowed in fish. From Tokyo, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
The headline screamed in the afternoon papers. One read, Tokyo Electric Power, acting without a plan. Another said, worst possible choice. The utility company insists that even if the sludge contaminates fish, radioactivity levels would be very low. If you're not comforted, neither is Jeff Kingston at Temple University's Japan branch.
The more they speak, the longer their nose becomes.
Wholesale prices for fish caught near the power plant have plunged 20%. Overseas orders are getting canceled. The Koreans don't want Japan's fish, nor do high-end London restaurants or the Shangri-La hotel chain. It's undermining Japan's brand. This country is famously persnickety about food safety.
I think this is going to have a significant impact on Japan's reputation as a reliable supplier of safe, fresh fish and vegetables.
Today, a local fishermen's group asked Tokyo Electric Power to stop polluting the ocean, but the PR disaster boat may have already sailed. In Tokyo, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Kelly and Todd Fox from Shelby, Michigan, want to corner the market on a new kind of wine, Jeremy. It's not red wine, not a Pinot Noir, or Pinot Grigio, which is a white wine.
Yeah.
I love the Pinot Grigio. It's green. The green wine
green.
Is here to stay. It is made
like the green
from
ketchup.
Yeah, it's not that, though. It's made from asparagus. It's asparagus
wow.
wine. Yeah. Michigan is a big asparagus producer, and they don't take near as long, those long stalks, they don't take long to ferment,
oh.
right? So grapes take a long time, right, to ferment, not the asparagus. So instead of waiting for that vintage Bordeaux to get just right, you can pop open that cork of veggie deliciousness in less than 6 months.
I don't know, Steve.
Oh, yes, you do. You want to try some of the asparagus
wine. All right,
wine.
Fine, I'll try
All
this
right,
one.
Here's a glass for you right now.
Thank you.
Listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, the 5th day of April. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm on Twitter as well, at Radio Chio. And you can give us your feedback by checking out marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says Contact. A graduate student from London has developed an iPhone app that's part GPS and part mood ring. The new technology comes as the British government this month begins its own survey of happiness as a way of measuring national productivity. From London, we continue Marketplace's Economy 4.0 series with special correspondent David Brancaccio.
Here's how the app works. Folks in Britain download it for free, then it bugs them a few times a day, asking, scale of 0 to 10, how happy are you right now? The app taps into the phone's navigation system to produce a geographical map of happiness levels across the UK, hence the name Mappiness.
We can reach thousands of people and we can know just where they are so that we can look at the environment in that location.
George McCarran led the team that developed Mappiness, which can figure out if someone feeling happy or sad is, at that moment, in a concrete jungle or near something more green.
Almost everybody can agree that green space is lovely, but the crucial thing really is, how lovely is green space? There are lots of things that we want to spend public money on and our own money on, and so working out how much of it should go on these elements of the environment is an important thing to do.
Happiest place in Britain, Angus in Scotland. The happiest time is, no surprise, 8 p.m. Saturday. But on a Tuesday, the most miserable day of the week, I've ended up here. Slough, a London suburb. It's the fictional home of the British version of the TV show The Office, but Slough is a real place, and according to Mappiness, the unhappiest place in Britain. 86-year-old Hilda awaits a bus outside a shopping mall here with nothing green in sight.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you today?
About 3, I suppose.
So not so happy?
The thing is, I lost my husband 23 years ago, so I just have to plod on. What can you do?
Hilda's not the iPhone type, which is one drawback of Mappiness. It only measures iPhone users. Also, the app doesn't just ask about happiness when it beeps. It also asks what you're doing at that moment, working, playing, or...
I think the option that we actually ask is intimacy, comma, making love.
Which could affect the results in the grand tradition of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. How happy can you be with that Mappiness app interrupting proceedings? In London, I'm David Brancaccio for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, sometimes the best way to market products to kids is to say something is dangerous or gross or perhaps toxic.
Don't touch that stuff.
It's toxic.
He's going to go touch that
stuff. Well, that's what an Indianapolis company called Candy Dynamics did with its product, Toxic Waste Bubble Gum. Problem is... You knew there would be a problem.
There's always a problem,
the
especially
gum.
With toxic waste bubble gum.
That's right. Well, the gum, which is made in Pakistan, is now being recalled because the FDA has discovered it contains elevated levels of lead.
Oh.
In other words, toxic waste bubble gum is indeed toxic.
You knew it was coming.
Imagine that.
You knew it was coming.
Well, you know, I guess you can judge a book by its cover, or you get what you pay for. There are a million cliches that I could say right now. And
you just said two of them.
I just said two of them.
That was great.
In Los Angeles, only time will tell. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
It takes one to know one. I don't know what that means. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like...
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.